Meryl Marco was a paradigm changer when, as the head writer for David Letterman's late night show and first daytime show on NBC, she helped create a new kind of late night television. Since leaving the world of late night television, she has been writing, written a couple of novels and a couple of books like the new one, Cool, Common, Contentious, that are books of her essays, musings on all sorts of things, some of which have to do with some rather personal stories involving her mom. She says that her mom is very responsible for who she became and for getting her into comedy. And she has advice for anybody who else who wants to get into comedy. She says, you have to be raised by a woman who has at least five or six of the following traits: bright, clever, crafty, fearless, complex, artistic, resourceful, and inventive, while at the same time oblivious, controlling, manipulative, neurotic, tasteless, intractable, solipsistic, thwarted, repressed, inconsistent, critical, self-destructive, depressed, angst-ridden, furious, suicidal, violent, narcissistic, fearful, self-loathing, selfish, and sadistic. Do all those, you're pretty much guaranteed a pretty good career in comedy. Meryl Marco joins me now here on the Big 550 KTRS. Good morning, Meryl.
Good morning.
I really enjoyed the stories about you and your mom and the rest of your adventures here. I'm curious, have you heard from others in the comedy world who've read this and said, that's my mom too?
Actually, that's the one most consistent piece of mail that I'm getting, not even from people in the comedy world. I knew that people in the comedy world had that mom because that's why I wrote the piece. I mean, I have a great many friends who are comedy writers and performers, and I've been, you know, as in getting to know them, I always talk to them about their families and stuff, and I kept hearing mother problems over and over. I mean, the world has mother problems. Human beings raising human beings is, by definition, a problematic situation.
Yeah.
But there was a particular kind of narcissistic mom that I kept hearing that all of my comedy friends had, and pretty soon it just dawned on me that we all more or less had the same mom. In degrees, not maybe mine was not as troubling as so. I know many people with far worse mother situations than my own. Mine was kind of a mild version compared to others. But what I've been getting a lot of mail from complete strangers is people going, "Well, apparently you're my sister," which is actually very gratifying to me. It's nice to know that. That I'm hitting a bunch of people between the eyes.
Let's illustrate just a little bit about how your relationship with your mom worked by telling the story of the first TV pilot you ever wrote.
It wasn't actually a TV pilot. The first time I wrote a script, and I was moving to L.A.,
I'm sorry.
I taught at a college for a year, and I have a master's degree in art. So I decided to change careers just sort of out of the blue, and I took a bunch of classes there at the college where I was teaching, so I was getting ready to move, and I wrote a bunch of what we call spec material, hoping to entice people to hire me when I got to L.A. And my mother, who was very, very literate, I mean, that was really her strong suit. She was really a problem kind of personality, very unpleasable, but very literate, and wanted to see what I'd written because she considered herself my mentor. So I reluctantly sort of let her read it, and then I paced around while she was reading it, and then I came back into the room where she was sitting with it in her lap, and I said, "So?" And she said, "Well, I don't happen to care for it, but I pray I'm wrong." Which was horribly, horribly painful to me when she said that. It just, like, was undermining here. I'd packed my car, you know, I was moving to L.A.
Yeah.
And now it appeared that what I was doing was utterly futile because, you know, why would she say that? But later in life, that line was sort of the premise of the entire piece, because I realized when I started doing stand-up, I delivered that line in front of an audience, and I got a laugh, and I realized, so the whole world agrees with me that was a really grotesque thing to say to somebody who's... And that was kind of just this great eye-opener for me. So that began me really analyzing her and so forth.
Yeah. Now, did you ever encounter a situation where you could say to your mom, "Hey, how about some support here, Mom?"
You know, I did try that because I went into therapy. I couldn't stop fighting with her because she always picked fights with me. That was just the nature of the emotional syndrome she was in, which I've since learned is narcissism, and where they use everybody as a vent for anger.
Yep.
But so I actually did do a TV pilot where, maybe this is a story you were thinking of, because this is in the book too, but I did a pilot that that I was in, and she wanted to see it, and I was reluctant at this point to show it to her because I knew what sort of stuff I was in for. So I had rehearsed with the shrink, and I actually said to my mother, Mom, all right, I'm going to show it to you, but can we make a little agreement? Don't really give me your reaction. Just say to me at the end of it, that was nice, dear. That was very nice. I don't really want any criticism. It's too late. I've already turned this thing in.
Yeah.
And she said, you don't want any criticism? If I can't criticize you, what are we supposed to talk about, the weather? I said, well, yeah, the weather is good. That's a good topic. Yeah, it's nice out. Let's talk about the weather. On the other hand, you know, my dad escaped from this. I eventually showed that pilot to my dad, and he fell asleep. They were just an amazing team for low self-esteem.
Yeah, boy, if you wanted people who could pump you up and make you feel good, this was not the couple to go to.
No, but then the weirdest part is they would insist on seeing it. Like my dad, when he fell asleep, I went, Dad, I thought you wanted to see this. He went, What are you watching me?
Was your mom this way with other people?
Well, I didn't really get to see her with very many other people. It was... I don't know whether or not, I think maybe family meant for them that all the tact is gone, that you're, that a loving family just disembowels you with honesty. I think that's what they thought. I mean, you know, that's the part that I never did figure out. I've grown up in life so introspective as a reaction to her. That I went to therapy for like 11 years and blah, blah, blah. But I could never really get straight answers from her about how she turned out like this because she didn't believe in therapy. She actually said to me at some point, I suggested that she go. She seemed very depressed. And she said, how would they know about me? Am I not a distinct individual?
But you see,
you're just now discounted the whole history of literature. You know, we have things in common.
But Meryl, even if that was a good idea, your mom would never have accepted it as a good idea if it came from you.
Yeah, well, that's true. Because I did hear that from other people that she praised me behind my back. It was just, I think... To be really blunt, I think she was competing with me.
Wow.
And I don't think she liked that I had taken her plans for a career that she never acted on and fulfilled them. I think that irked her.
Talking with Meryl Marco about her new book, Cool, Calm, and Contentious, Paul Harris here on the Big 550 KTRS. You include in the book some travel diaries.
Yeah, well, that was diaries. Well, this was the other funny thing. I mean, all this stuff is funny in retrospect. At the time, it was kind of upsetting. But
yeah.
Actually, those diaries weren't upsetting. They were just sort of made my eyes pop out of my head. When my mom died, I knew she had a little sack of diaries in her closet, and I really hesitated as to whether or not I should look at them because that seemed invasive. I always kept diaries. I kept diaries from a child on. So, and my diaries were very, very personal and full of whining and complaining about, you know, boyfriends and whatever. And so I was hesitating whether I should read hers, and then I thought, well, maybe it'll give me an explanation, a clue as to why she was so angry and what really was going on with her. Maybe she revealed herself in these diaries. I really ought to read them. So I took them back to L.A. with me after she died, and I sat down with a glass of wine thinking that they were going to be kind of gut-wrenching and alarming and stuff. And what they were was my mother complaining her way across the world. They were travel diaries, and she was unhappy with every country she went to, which was also very enlightening to me. I mean, I realized, you know, Bali didn't get her approval, so what? Really, why was I expecting her approval?
So it's not just me, it's the entire planet.
Yeah, it was the whole planet. It was really the whole planet. I mean, she said that St. Mark's Square in Venice was in terrible taste, and so I just, you know, that's really where I ended with it. And then later, I gave it a lot of thought as to whether I should publish this stuff because it's weird to kind of, you know, talk about the dead and show and quote diaries and stuff. But then I later thought that really my job in life, I think, as a writer, is to tell you what life was like for me in my stay on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really the eye opener for me about unbelievable people.
The book is cool, calm, and contentious, and it is not just all about Meryl and her mom. There are other wonderful stories in here, including a guide for perhaps it's specifically for women, but maybe for both men and women.
It's definitely for men, too. But I actually wrote it in response to a couple of female friends of mine who just keep cycling around on the same different guys, and they were different. They have different faces, and they have different clothing selections, but they're the same a-hole.
Yeah,
and so I just thought, well, I'm going to make a complete list and just tell them what to watch out for, because it's another thing that I've been tracking my whole life. Is every time something really goes awry and I didn't see it, I think, oh, I got to remember that. So I tried to make a really, really complete list of what to watch out for in horrible people.
I was curious as I was reading through this, because you've been in, around, and within the show business community in some form or another so much of your life. I wonder if there's a higher percentage of these a-holes that you include in the chapter's called How to Spot an A-Hole. Except it,
well, I don't think anyone argues that show business is riddled from one end to the other with a-holes. I think everyone kind of agrees, including the field of radio, I might add. I bet.
No, what are you talking about? That's crazy talk, Meryl.
No, I mean, it's sort of no accident that nobody in show business can keep a relationship going. It's you generally two psychotic, impossible people, briefly in love. But
or in lust.
Yeah, briefly in lust. And so, yeah, it's no accident. But on the other hand, I don't think that show business has the edge really on politics, for crying out loud, or or you know, any place where anybody's worked. Look at the whole show, The Office, is about that, and that's supposed to be middle-level.
Yep.
Middle-level people that we all run into.
Absolutely right. The other thing I wanted to ask you about before we run out of time here is I follow you on Twitter. And you write such clever stuff on a daily basis. And I just saw a piece on CBS Sunday Morning about Albert Brooks, who's also joined the Twitterverse this year. And he was asked, you know, will you go back to doing stand-up comedy? And he said, well, I'm thinking about it, but I kind of use Twitter for that. I think of something and I put it on there. And I thought to myself, well, this is kind of what Meryl is doing. Are you waking up every day saying, okay, three jokes for Twitter, let's go?
That is exactly what I've been doing. I've just been, I was like a lot of people, just reluctant to join Twitter because you think, what is it? Why do I want it? But then I realized, because it's of the limitations on the amount of letters you can put into it, it's actually more appealing to me than Facebook, because you can just write a joke. You have to hone that joke like crazy. You have to keep removing the ands and putting in a sign for and.
Yep.
You have to take because and make it into B/C and stuff. But it's a perfect little exercise in writing jokes. It's not really. I bet I would put all my money on Albert returning to stand-up, because you don't get the same exact applause that you get when. Although he's dropped out for a lot of years, so maybe he's not an applause junkie.
Yeah, but a retweet, not quite the same as a clap.
A retweet is good, and Albert is really, really careful with his. I'm on his Twitter feed, and he's really, really careful with. I've noticed one joke a day most.
Yeah.
And from that guy, he's really making sure it's only his best joke. I've been trying to do three, but
yeah.
I didn't actually find three yesterday. I was too distracted by other things.
That's all right. Nobody's...
But it really is a fun reason. In reading the news, I realized I like writing jokes. I hadn't really written jokes in a while. I was doing stand-up until about 5 or 6 years ago. I was doing some stand-up. And then the venue I was doing it at disappeared, and then was too much trouble to find another place I wanted to do it. But yeah, I'm with him. It's fun. It really is kind of fun to have a reason to put the joke somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think the stuff you're doing there is funny, and I really enjoyed the book. And unlike your mom, I give you my seal of approval.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's good to talk to you again. Thanks for your time, Meryl.
Okay.
The book is called Cool, Calm, and Contentious by Meryl Marco. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.